10% more calls related to marijuana exposure than it did in 2013. We know that youth are particularly at risk for accidental poisonings when marijuana products are not stored safely or out of reach. The second is that marijuana slows reaction times and doubles the risk of traffic accidents. When drivers are under the influence of both marijuana and alcohol, impairment is compounded. The third issue is that marijuana use by pregnant and breastfeeding mothers is of great concern. So avoiding any chemical exposures like marijuana is really a priority for healthy fetus and infant development. And finally, fourth, and related to our concern for pregnant and breastfeeding mothers, is around youth access. And this has to do with the developing brain. So we know that, well, our understanding of the effects of marijuana on the developing brain are still evolving, but we're taking the precautionary principle here, and we're assuming that those effects are unlikely to be good. We do have strong evidence that marijuana users who start at a young age have an increased risk for becoming dependent. So keeping all of that in mind, as we look at the proposed ordinance to address time, place, and manner of operation of marijuana businesses, we expect the ordinance to be helpful in addressing these concerns. Based on what we know from a large body of alcohol and retail outlet research, limiting the density of marijuana retail outlets is prudent. Studies have consistently shown that high alcohol retailer density is associated with increases in alcohol misuse, unintentional injuries, and crime. The density limit not only improves neighborhood livability, but it may also discourage impulsive purchases and the negative consequences that result, such as overdose and auto crashes. The limitation on hours of sales also should help limit the consequences of impulsive purchases on fatal auto accidents, which occur most often on weekend nights. Finally, ordinance requirements to assure age verification upon business entry and at retail sale is a fundamental part of limiting youth access and of setting the norm that marijuana use is an adult activity. The county is also actively engaged with the Oregon Health Authority and Oregon Liquor Control Commission in public policy development around other common sense rules about potency, packaging, testing, and pesticide use. We urge you to also monitor and provide input on these issues that are outside of the city's authority. So in closing, we'd like to thank the City of Portland for its diligence in developing this ordinance. We appreciate your efforts to hold town hall meetings and gather community input. The ordinance presented today not only incorporates community feedback, but also maintains structure around time, place, and manner that supports our vision in public health. Thank you.
Thank you. Further questions for anyone on this panel? Thank you all very much. Do you have other invited testimony, commissioners? If we turn to the sign-up sheet. Okay, Carla, let's please turn to the sign-up sheet.
I have 13 people signed up. The first three, please, coming up are Joe Petrie, Anthony Johnson, and Donald Morse. And they'll be followed by Philip Chen, Mike Rochlin, and Samuel Groves.
Welcome. Good afternoon.
Somebody moved in within 1,000 feet, and he'd worked at that spot for 2 years and make it a business. The man is here, too. And
somehow, we got beat to the punch. It had to be nanoseconds for him to get the license after we've worked there for 2 years. We couldn't figure out how he could have done it. Well, now we have. They have a program that get their applications in before anybody else's. They got a supercomputer system, super money, backing these out-of-town people who want to make rules that benefit them, that put people like that have been here working for 10 and 12 years out of business. This man right here has been here for 6 years. He runs the Human Collective. He sells cannabis to patients cheaper than anybody. He works at such a profit margin that I don't know how he makes money. And he's going to lose his business. Even before you guys get to the next step, this is already rigged. They have it rigged. And her applications, their applications right here, and they've already tried this program. Their applications will get in before anybody else's. They've already tried it during the Dispensary Act, and they're going to do it this time, big time. I suggest that you're not grandfathering these people in that have paid their dues here on the state, but at the same time, make it equal for everybody to get their application in and make sure that they're residents of the state. Make sure that they're not from Colorado or from some other state coming here to make laws that benefit indoor growers when we have we grow the best cannabis in the world and it's grown outdoors. You're going to create a big, big friction here between the medical people, the outdoor growers. We're going to bury these people. But we're not going to take them fixing the game. We're not going to take it. And that's what they've done. They got away with it at the Dispensary Act. They're not going to get away with it this time. I'm begging you now, you need to really take a close look at who you're dealing with. You know, I went to Lewis and Clark to a talk like this, and I was first on the list. I was surprised. I got put to the rear because they didn't want me to come and be able to speak to you like I'm speaking to you today. But just like it happened to my friend at Leroy at Hallelujah Farms. And by the way, these people that moved in within 1,000 square feet, they were out of business in 90 days because, one, they didn't know how to grow pot. Two, they didn't know how to run a dispensary. Three, they hadn't done their marketing. They didn't have their following. They didn't have their business. These people have businesses, customers that have been set up for a long, long time.
Thank you.
You made that very, very clear. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Welcome.
Thank you for listening to me here. My name is Donald Morse. I'm the director of the Oregon Cannabis Business Council. We're a trade organization for the industry. And I also own the Human Collective Dispensary here in Portland. Ms. Margolis laid out the problems here with this plan as we read it. Someone can go across the street from any dispensary in town and rent a location, not make any improvements to it, and then file the application. And if they're just nanoseconds ahead of us, they get it. And the dispensary that's been a part of the community, built up his business, employs any number of people, et cetera, will be forced out of business. Now, you may say, well, they can remain a medical facility. Well, the OLCC and the OHA are on record, both publicly and privately, as saying that within 2 years they expect that the two systems will merge. Market forces are going to make this happen. The dispensary owners in my organization, all of them plan to go retail. And the reason is they know that if they don't, it spells the end of their business within a couple of years. So really what you're doing is you're setting up a dynamic that can punish the people who paved the way for the industry in this state. And I think that is a gross injustice.
Thank you.
So how will medical patients get their medication if everybody goes to retail?
Medical patients, for instance, in mine, medical patients can come in and buy in a retail establishment. There's nothing stopping them from doing that. However, there is the tax. In this coming short session, we are going to be pushing a bill that will basically state that medical patients with a card cannot be taxed regardless of what type of facility they go into. So that'll take care of that problem. We expect that to pass because we have a tremendous amount of support for it. Secondly, in my dispensary, even if after I become retail, the OLCC is allowing us to give uniform discounts. So I could discount 15% off of the price of any product that's listed at retail for anyone with a card, and that's exactly what we anticipate doing. So we built our businesses on the medical patients. We have no wish to turn our back on them. We're going to protect them every step of the way. But this is going to become a one-channel industry within a few years. And basically, these dynamics will punish the people who have helped to set the industry up as it is now, and it's just not fair.
I'm very glad to hear that you're looking out for the patients. Thank
Definitely.
You.
Yes, my name is Anthony Johnson. I was co-author and chief petitioner of Measure 91. I am the executive director and registered lobbyist with New Approach Oregon, the PAC responsible for Measure 91, and the Vote Yes on 91 campaign. Today I'd like to first briefly just touch upon the fact that we do need to have social use lounges or places for people to use cannabis in this city. Under state law, marijuana needs to be out of public view and cannot be used in a public place. But that doesn't discount private clubs and private establishments, similar to cigar bars, for instance. Most pressing to the rules and regulations before us today, as Don and Amy, others have touched upon, is the 1,000-foot barrier. And in Measure 91, when we wrote the measure, we did not have any 1,000-foot barrier in the measure. And that 1,000-foot, and over 56% of Oregonians, 70% of Portlanders voted for that measure without the 1,000-foot barrier. And we were aware of the 1,000-foot barrier that exists for medical marijuana dispensaries, and there are plenty of good actors that have been good partners, good neighbors, serving patients admirably within the medical marijuana community. But also that 1,000-foot barrier also cut out people who could also be good neighbors and do good work. And just because you get your application in 1 second earlier or a minute earlier than somebody else doesn't necessarily mean you're going to be the better representative for the industry. And so we would argue that marijuana should be treated like bars, breweries, and wineries. And we follow in the footsteps of our microbrew and local winery industries and not have a 1,000-foot barrier. And the saturation issue will, I wasn't going to say weed itself out, but the saturation issue will correct itself in that the cream will rise to the top and those actors will survive and the bad actors will fade away. If we operated our microbrewery industry like we did, like we're proposing to do with marijuana, you could imagine a time where the McMinnon brothers or Deschutes or somebody would be not allowed to enter the industry because somebody got their application in 1 second before them. So I would argue, and we would argue, to not have that 1,000-foot barrier, allow the competition, and allow the cream to rise to the top, and that's a better policy for Portland and the rest of the state.
Well, let me be clear about this from my standpoint. I think this is probably pretty shared among us. My interest in any kind of a 1,000-foot or any other buffer approach is not at all founded on a desire to create a system that people could game or a system in which we're trying to pick winners and losers among business people. But what it comes from is unhappy experience in this city with what is known as Lottery Row on Hayden Island, with a very close proximity of establishments that are both licensed liquor dispensers and lottery dispensers, both ironically licensed by state government. It's created a very odious situation for the people that live near that. And having been once burned, we're now a little shy. And so we're looking for ways to make sure we don't replicate that problem there or in other neighborhoods. So that's why I asked Ms. Margolis, you know, understand the problem we're trying to solve. The problem we're not trying to solve is figure out who we like better and make sure they succeed. Not at all. That's not what's going on here. But we do have a responsibility for neighborhood livability, and we've seen it eroded in that instance by the proliferation of state-licensed restricted substance distributors and state-licensed gambling operations too close together and causing all kinds of side effects that's hurt the livability of the neighborhood. So understand that's the problem we're trying to solve. I think I speak for the whole council in articulating that. So this discussion is very helpful because maybe we don't have it right yet, but understand where we're trying to go.
May I offer more solution then? Just to allow, say, a two-day period when you begin accepting licenses in which to allow existing businesses to make their decision and submit their application. After that, it's an open field for whoever wants to enter as long as they're outside our buffer zone or whatever. And that way you get to limit the number and you get to protect the industry that's brought us this far.
Yeah, okay, that's great. Good, thank you.
And if I could just chime in, I do think, I guess grandfathered in, if you will, existing medical marijuana dispensaries is a better policy than allowing the existing medical marijuana dispensaries to be blocked out of the upcoming adult use system. But I still think a better policy is to make sure we bring in qualified people. And I think that a more comprehensive approach that maybe looks at the different neighborhoods in the city. Some neighborhoods may be okay with the larger proliferation of marijuana dispensaries, while others may not. It may not be as suitable for those locations. But just to think that people existing today are necessarily better than people who would come into the market isn't exactly the case. I do think it's a better policy than allowing somebody to swoop in and take their 1,000-foot barrier, but I think that a more comprehensive approach would be a better approach, and that we have time to consider these issues out, as the state's not going to be accepting applications until January 4th. And that something, a decision like this, it does have a big impact upon who gets to participate in this industry, as well as who really is still targeted by the drug war, the war on marijuana, because they're not able to participate in this industry, I think is an important issue for us to consider.
Thank you. Thank you all very much.
Thank you.
The next three
are Philip Chen, Mike Rocklin, and Samuel Gross, and they'll be followed by Lindsay Reinhard, Sarah Duff, and William Frederick Mario.
Welcome. Would you like to be first, Mr. Chen? Go ahead.
I'd like to echo some of the points that Anthony.
Give us your name again for the
Philip
record.
Philip Chen, owner of Puddletown Organics. It's a medical marijuana dispensary. I want to start by saying that the compassion for patients is how this industry and the state was built. That being said, we face a saturation in Portland specifically. And I know in my case, and I speak for many of my colleagues here who are also dispensary owners, that if recreational shops open in between us, then some of us are just 1,000 feet away from each other already. If a shop opens up in between me and my nearest neighbor, now we have 3 shops within 1,000 feet of each other, and it makes the neighborhood unlivable. So we already have the operating experience. We've already invested. And I think that with increased competition, you'll see more places go out of business, and that would lead to more vacancies and would affect the macroeconomics of Portland severely when people have to give up their lease. So the people that are already in place, I think, should have at least a first shot at receiving recreational licenses.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Welcome.
Hi, I'm Mike Rocklin, and I'm a patient advocate, public health nurse, and I'm interested in what you've done. I think I've attended a lot of legislative events down in Salem initially and OLCC meetings, and have seen the state really perform well, and I think the city is doing a commendable job of with outreach to the communities, probably better than any other city in the state that I'm aware of. So I think that's goodness. And after following what I heard from Amy Morgonis in terms of the idea that we might be headed into, like, the other words that we use are like land grab. I've seen that already this last year. It's been driving real estate prices crazy. So there's a natural tendency, people hear that this is a green rush, like a gold rush, and they're wanting to get some money. So I think that's what's driving some of this. The newness of it and the concerns I have to do with the medical patients that have already been established, the dispensary owners that have done very credible work and been involved in this whole process as we've gone along, lend to the experience of being able to be fair and good players in this industry. So the other point I'd like to make is that this 1,000-foot rule, I hadn't heard that explanation before, and that's really good to understand. And I think that, we're at a point now to set something great and maybe amend it later would be a good idea. The idea on allowing medical dispensaries that exist now that have a business license, I think, is really good and important for the community, because as I also heard and had experienced neighbors, communities concerned, when a sign pops up, a posting, that's a lot of fear for the neighbors. I've been involved in community groups, and that certainly is a concern. So look forward to a fair and transparent process, as this appears to be. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome.
Good afternoon. My name is Samuel Gross. I'm an attorney here in Portland. I also serve on the OLCC's Licensing and Enforcement Rules Advisory Committee. A lot of the sentiments that I feel have already been echoed today by some of my colleagues here, Amy Margolis, Anthony Johnson. One of the things that I want to point out, and I don't want to repeat some of the points that have already been made today, but what the industry seems to be asking for is that they get first crack at issuing, at obtaining a retail license for adult use marijuana. This sets up an interesting problem for them because currently, under the proposed OLCC regulations, a particular physical location could only be issued an OLCC license or a license under the OHA, and that those two licenses cannot coexist in the same space. So therefore, if a business wanted to apply for the recreational side, as soon as that license was issued, they would have to then give up their OHA license.
Because for medical, you mean?
For medical, yeah. Correct. And so therefore, they would have to choose immediately upon that application. So this could set up some interesting issues because they would give up the health license, the OHA license, and then that would free up a space on the map potentially for another medical dispensary to move in next door to them. So the other thing I want to look at this 1,000-foot rule is we're worried about oversaturation, and we're treating the city as a homogenous fabric, which we know it's not. We have some areas that are higher density in population and other areas that are not. If you look at Southwest Portland and the Pearl District and the core here, we have a higher density of population, and therefore it might make sense to allow more dispensaries to exist or more retail outlets to exist in that space. When you take into account the exclusion zones for schools that are already in place, you only have room for a handful, a discrete number of businesses to operate in the downtown core here, which may actually need to support more dispensaries. And then you can look at other areas of the city which aren't as densely populated, that a 1,000-foot exclusion may be even too allow businesses to pack in too closely. So I think that Measure 91, so the city may regulate in a reasonable time, place, manner, and that treating the city as homogenous with a 1,000-foot among all businesses just may not be reasonable in this case. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Thank you all very much. Questions? Thanks. Next ones.
Next three are Lindsay Reinhardt, Sarah Duff, and William Frederick Mario. And they'll be followed by Jeff Sugarman, Mike McGrath, and Bo Whitney.
Welcome. Good afternoon.
Hi. Thank you. My name is Lindsay Reinhardt. I'm here today to talk about a couple of things that I found in the ordinance. On page 1, number 8, there is concern about the saturation. I wanted to refer you to the Colorado and Sacramento land use studies that show that areas that have cannabis dispensaries are higher in security and safer for the environment, as we are required to have extreme security measures in place. I work at One Draw Two Dispensary in Portland. We have had officers come into our facility and ask us for our security footage because there were crimes that were committed right by us, and we weren't able to help them with those cases.
I appreciate your testimony. I don't. You're going to get your full time, but I would welcome your view on what's the downside of a rule that just says 1,000 feet between dispensaries, regardless of whether they're medical or recreational. I'd just be interested in your view as to why that would be bad.
Well, it's detrimental to some of the facilities. The one that I work at, we're a medical facility, and then right next door, we also have a glass store where we would like to serve recreational cannabis. We share a wall with that. The owners own the entire building. So we have a medical facility on one side. We'd like to have a recreational on the other where we can go ahead and utilize both licenses in one location. But they're two separate locations because they're two separate addresses. They are very much within a foot of each other.
And alternatively, if we did adopt the narrower view of the 1,000-foot rule, you'd have to go find another space four blocks away or 4.5 blocks away.
Correct, and they already own the one that's adequate to serve both populations. So asking them to have an additional expense when they already have the necessary space and security is a little bit outlandish, in my opinion.
Again, Mayor's going to give you all your time, but let me just ask you something. Do you feel that, is there an equity argument here? I mean, did your owner take actions anticipating that the laws would be a certain way? Did they take their chances?
No, we have design plans in. They want to knock out a wall and see if they could have a dual license, which doesn't exist yet. And so now I came here to find out if they should knock out a wall or not. You know, should there be a dual license, or should they have a recreational and a medical side by side? Is that even going to be allowed? You know, because that buffer zone, we absolutely have other dispensaries that are almost exactly 1,000 feet away from us on the plus side of the law. So they are over 1,000 feet, and we do weed each other out. We've watched that dispensary that's 1,000 feet from us fail twice now, and it's because there's good actors and there's bad actors.
That's helpful. Thank you.
Thank you. So the other one thing I wanted to address on there is that there's already a lot of cannabis processors and producers active in Portland that aren't going to be able to wait for an OLCC license in order to obtain their Portland license, and I felt that the language on page 9 was a little bit directionless on that. It just kind of seemed like a big loop. On page 6, there is the order in which it's received to the director of the application. We'd like to know if that is processed or if it's payment received, and if it's going to be an online process, because, again, with the internet concerns about people hitting enter before they're able. On page 9, letter B, it says that they can be registered or licensed. Registering a business with the state of Oregon is very easy. It doesn't cost very much money, and you can do it online. Licensing is an entirely different issue. It takes us months to get licenses from OHA, so making that language be more clear, saying that they have to be licensed, would be appreciated. On page number 11, number 2, it says that there's no on-site consumption allowed. The state law says that if you're a patient in an enclosed, locked room, that you are allowed to use your medicine on-site at the facility. It is not to be, you know, shared. It is not to be blatant. It is to be able to safely and properly use your medication. I would ask that you please go with the state law there. I have multiple sclerosis. I'm off 22 pills. I don't care to take any, and I would like my medicine to be acceptable to use at work, please.
Give us a real-world example of how that works.
Sure, absolutely. I sit in a very cold room all day processing paperwork, and I have muscle spasms. So if I close that door and I lock it, there's no windows, I'm not in public view, and I can use my medical cannabis, and then my muscle spasms stop.
That's very helpful. Thank you.
Thank you. So we really do need to have that. And then as far as consumption goes on site, as far as the lounges go, you have 3 lounges that I know of operating in the city of Portland. Those are safe havens for people that have PTSD, people that have chronic pain, people who are going through cancer. People are able to go network at those lounges and meet other people that can help them through those experiences. And it's absolutely incredibly necessary to our community to be able to support one another. So when you guys do go ahead and do lounges, I would ask that you please consider those very carefully, because they're very important to those that use them. And lounges and events. The events, we had a really interesting trouble with the High Times Cup. So we need to be able to have a place where we can hold cups and be able to have people medicate properly or recreate properly and still be able to leave safely and in an orderly fashion without the OLC stepping in saying you can't do that. So we need to be able to have a place that we can hold our events at. And the last thing I had was on breastfeeding in pregnant mothers. There are several studies from Jamaica that say that cannabis is safe for nursing when pregnant women. I'd also urge you to look at those.
Thanks very much for helpful. Welcome.
Thank you. My name is Sarah Duff. I've been a cannabis activist for 13 years in Missouri, but in Portland for the last 10 years, and I live in Portland. I'm here to talk about just my view of trying to have a low cost of barrier to enter the industry, and it does seem like with the license fees that they are relatively high compared to many other industries' license fees. The medical cannabis dispensaries, it looks like you all are proposing $1,750 for your license fee, and the state fee, I believe, will end up being $4,500 by the end of it. But when the voters voted, they voted for a $1,250 fee for recreational licenses, and at the time, we already knew that it was $4,000 for a state fee for the medical dispensary. And so now, under the proposed rules, if we have to have licenses for the city and the state, it looks like it would end up being $6,250 for the city and state fee for medical dispensaries and $7,500 for recreational retail licenses. So if you wanted to do both of those, that looks like about $10,500 per year, and that seems like a lot of money. It also looks like there would be double enforcement, enforcement on the state level as well as on the city level. It doesn't really seem like we need to have double enforcement. I think just one is enough. I also wanted to reiterate something that Lindsay was saying, that we do need to have lounges and events and the ability to use marijuana. Let's see, one way that that we should be arguing that marijuana is similar to alcohol, we all like using it together. It's a very communal drug, if you want to call it a drug. It's a non-toxic herbal remedy to a lot of people. I think that we need a champion on this issue. We don't have that on the state level. If we should have that anywhere, it should be Portland. So I'm going to be pushing for allowing that on the state level, and hopefully we'll be able to craft better regulations here in Portland since we do have the most support. In other industries like the furniture industry, they like to have various furniture stores in the same area. And I think that marijuana could be very similar to that. This may be one issue where marijuana and alcohol are not exactly the same. It may be possible that lottery and alcohol may not exist the best way if you have multiple competition right across the street from each other. That may be a little bit different than marijuana. I'll cite for an example, there's, basically 39th and Hawthorne, or Cesar Chavez. So you have, there's two different smoke shops directly across from each other, and then there's one just a half block away. So there's three within one block. And they don't seem to be arguing with each other. It is nice to have those options as a consumer myself, and I do think that there is so much variance between quality, between dispensaries or retail outlets, that we can support having multiple competition across the street from each other.
May I just ask you, as an activist, are there cities where you think concentration has been proven to be successful?
I don't know if we've had a chance to see that as much yet, but in Colorado, I would say they probably, that might be a good one to look at, since I know that there are so few licenses in Washington, it's kind of hard to look at them and learn from them. So it's possible that we may have to take the lead in order to see what happens.
Thank you. Welcome.
What be with the Babylon to deal with? My name is William Holtz, and I'd like to thank you guys for letting me speak, Mayor, City Commissioners. I am a member of Narcotics Anonymous. I'm also a recovering crystal meth addict, and cannabis has been instrumental in me being able to get off of that and no longer be a menace to the community. I also represent Strictly Solutions Clean and Sober Motorcycle Club, and I'm no longer a member of the Gypsy Jokers. So I do have an insight of a little bit as to how organized crime does affect local businesses, as well as returning from after they had the little thing they called the occupation out in the street over there, which I believe did kind of turn into a riot. So this is my first time coming into City Hall on the inside to speak rather than on the outside out there. I think that I was very blessed in my neighborhood. I live at 2114 Northeast Everett Street, and I was very, very fortunate to be able to walk over to a dispensary and state my position and let them know that cannabis was also something that I wanted to stop using in order to be functional and complete in my recovery. They were instrumental in allowing me to come in there in a very, very out of it disposition, very improper member of society, which I do consider myself to be getting closer to today. And there's nothing recreational to me about marijuana or cannabis, whatever you want to call it. You have to be able to interpret the law. I understand the political science, the Articles of Confederation of Faction. It's the Wild West out here a little bit. I understand due to federal law, marijuana is illegal. Growing marijuana, consuming marijuana, distributing marijuana, it's all illegal. Some of us have given more of our personal interests away. The sheriff and local law enforcement that do protect the business owners that are trying to function under the guidelines of state law, they have to be able to represent each other properly in order to create safety. I've tried growing marijuana at home in my father's house. We did an experiment with one plant. We tried moving it in view and out of view.
And it does everything from being an attractive nuisance to teenagers coming in order to try to steal the plants to other things. I think it would be best to model after the existing dispensaries that are in place that have a relationship with the sheriff and how they're already operating. The recreational part I don't know much about, but the medical part I believe should stay in place. They have their own private security and a relationship that does work. And it's closer, and it works better with problematic patients such as myself that they can move on and get to where they need to be. That's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Okay.
Next are Jeff Sugarman, Mike McGrath, and Bo Whitney. And the last person who signed up is Sam Chapman.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Go ahead, Jeff.
Mayor Hills, members of the City Council, my name is Jeff Sugarman. I submitted written testimony, and I'm here today on behalf of one of my clients, Groundworks Industries. I'm not going to repeat a lot of what I said today. I, too, am very concerned about the 1,000-foot rule. I think we've always known that one of the most challenging issues we would face following the passage of Measure 91 is the intersection of the recreational market and the medical marijuana market. I think all of us want to make sure that medical patients can continue to get their medicine untaxed. And I agree with Mr. Morris's comments before that I think the legislature is soon to act on that issue. I do want to point out that in Colorado, medical facilities were given the right to opt into the recreational system first, and it seemed to work very well there. I think most of the cities in Colorado really appreciated the opportunity for those medical facilities to make their choice first and then allow other recreational facilities in to fill in the blanks, so to speak. In Oregon, the legislature has adopted some regulations around time, place, and manner. OLCC is going to give a lot more, but unlike the siting of liquor stores and places that offer video lottery, the legislature has given the city the opportunity to make some policy choices on its own. My fear is that the current ordinance is written, is that you will virtually double the number of outlets in Portland if you adopt the 1,000-foot from each other, but not from each other, from like facilities, but not from all other facilities. I have proposed some language that I think will help. I think it's similar to what Ms. Margolis proposed, and I think it makes sense in those areas where there's concern about oversaturation. We think that these shops will continue to operate safely. They've done a great job since the passage of House Bill 3460 under the licensing and regulations that they faced, but we do understand that there are concerns within the city about doubling the number of stores. So this change, which says no marijuana regulatory license shall be issued to a facility that is within 1,000 feet of an OHA medical marijuana dispensary licensee or another OLCC marijuana retail licensee, would accomplish the problem that we're dealing with here. And with that, I think that in summary, we believe that this would lead to a much more orderly process, a thoughtful, a fair, and a workable process for city licensure of both medical and recreational facilities. Thank you very much.
What's your thought of the alternative suggestion of merely allowing the medical to apply a day or two earlier?
I think that's a workable solution, too. I think the idea is that we want to give those folks a chance, those folks who have been participating, who've gone through the state process, who've set up their security systems, who've invested in businesses and employees and leases, give them the opportunity to move into this new market and still leave room for others to come in. So I would be okay with that option as well.
Thank you very much. Welcome.
My name is Bo Whitney. I'm representing Greenpoint, Oregon, an Oregon-based corporation, and Left Coast Connection, a Portland-based medical dispensary. I've submitted written testimony, and I just wanted to highlight a couple of items that's included in that testimony. We're in favor of many of the principles associated with public safety and non-proliferation to individuals under the age of 21. However, there's a few aspects of the findings and the proposed ordinances that we're not necessarily in favor of. In Section 1 of the published materials for this meeting, It said that there's a claim that saturation increases the likelihood that those under the age of 21 will have access. And we're very, you know, we appreciate that concern. However, there is a substantial body of research that has demonstrated that usage of marijuana by those under the age of 21 actually decreases in states and communities where medical marijuana dispensaries are legal. So just wanted to point that out, as you know, for educational purposes. Comments on Chapter 14B, 130. An overall comment is I'm not sure why marijuana testing facilities are not included in this ordinance. And on Section 14 or 14B, Section 8, Subsection 2, restricting the hours of operation. Essentially, the goals of that you stated in your materials is to protect and preserve public health, safety, and general welfare. But this is a retail outlet. There's no direct evidence that would support the policy that restricting hours are necessary to support your goals. Otherwise, you know, there would be a you know, there would be a restriction on cigarettes that are sold, because there's a pretty well documented body of evidence that supports cigarettes are a public health and safety issue. And then in terms of the fees, there are some concerns that the fees are substantial enough that it would impact small businesses and minority businesses, and that don't necessarily have access to this level of money. So, you know, in general, the overall goal we support, there's some aspects that could be looked into to be touched up a little bit. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Welcome.
My name is Mike McGrath. I own a small company called Bridgetown Distribution. I'm a wholesaler who works within the medical marijuana program. I, generally speaking, here's who supports the idea of the two-day waiting period or the opportunity for medical dispensaries to put in their application first. Opportunity I would hope to have the same opportunity for already operating in the medical marijuana. Furthermore, thinking of what could happen if that's not addressed, you know, it would not be good for the city of Portland. It would create a circus, I think, and we would want to avoid that at all costs. Myself, I'm not originally from here, and the opportunities that I've gained out here in Portland are unmatched in any other area of the country that I've lived and I've been around. I was a pedicab driver. It was fun, but it was just another opportunity that I was allowed. And here, there's so many small businesses and entrepreneurs that have the ability to, you know, make it. And how it's written can definitely confound that. So that's pretty much all I have to say.
Thank you. Thank you all very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We have one more signed up, and then if there's anyone else that wants to speak who didn't sign up, this would be the time. So come on up.
Last are Sam Chapman, and we have Rainy Day Woman 12 and Rainy Day Woman 35.
Okay. Welcome.
Hi, thank you. Mayor Hales, Commissioners, my name is Sam Chapman for the record. I run New Economy Consulting, which is a firm based here in Portland that works with municipalities across the state in crafting regulations around the marijuana industry, as well as we have clients that also need to navigate those regulations. Again, I don't want to take too much time. I'd like to echo the thoughts of many other people behind me regarding the 1,000-foot buffer issue that we've been dealing with here. I do think that it would automatically double the amount of dispensaries that we would have in the city. I've been to a couple of the work groups, which, by the way, I'd like to thank Victor and Teresa both for hosting those. They were very informative, and they were very responsive to concerns of both community members and marijuana industry members alike. So thank you. And I think when I initially had asked about why we were not including 1,000-foot buffers between medical and recreational. The response I got was, we don't have the authority. And so I looked into that. I went and met with legislative council last week in Salem to check and see whether or not the city of Portland may have the authority to do that. And maybe the confusion was there that you have the time, place, and manner authority in two different places, one for medical and one for recreational, but they're not necessarily in the same place, right, in different bills. And so I think maybe the confusion there was, well, if we don't explicitly have authority to write a regulation that deals with both medical and recreational, then we're not sure if we want to go down that route. And so I wanted to share with you, when I met with legislative council, they said you absolutely do have the authority, and if we could avoid having them write an opinion on it, they would like us to do that. The second part to that same issue was, I noticed that it was stated in the presentation that the city didn't want to be preferential to existing facilities. And I was curious as to why that was, outside of maybe business reasons, if there's a specific reason why you didn't want to be preferential to existing facilities.
That was reflecting the feedback we heard from the community at the town halls.
Okay.
It wasn't a city position.
Very good. Okay.
Let me turn that around if I could, because it seems to me it raises a legal question of just us declaring that one group of licensees is privileged over another. So
right.
You're the lawyer, so...
Not an attorney.
Excuse me.
Not an attorney.
That is a compliment. But,
thank you.
You're the advocate.
Thank you.
And we'll have to ask our esteemed counsel. But I mean, what are the analogies, examples of where we just declare that, you know, one class of licensees gets a privilege over another, just because we say so?
Sure. No, and that's a great question. And again, not an attorney, so I can't give legal advice on that. But I do think that, you know, one of those classes of licensees exists and one does not right now. And I think that's a major distinction. No one holds any recreational licenses. They just don't exist. And so we're talking about existing businesses that, again, has been previously stated, these are good actors. They've been licensed, right? I mean, these are people that have constituents, that have patients. And one thing that hasn't been mentioned tonight that I would very much like to put before you to consider is that, as it's been said, many of these medical dispensaries are going to want to transition to recreational, right? They're going to bring their patients with them. A lot of their patients are not going to pay $400 to renew their card. That's tax money for the city of Portland if you were to implement your 3% tax or whichever route you go. And so that is one additional reason as to why you may want to consider giving preferential treatment to medical dispensaries. And if even not to think of it as preferential treatment, but rather avoiding additional saturation, which I really hear is the larger goal here, and I think you can very easily accomplish that through the suggestions that have been stated here tonight in making sure that any marijuana retailer, whether medical or recreational, is not allowed to exist within 1,000 feet of each other. Two other quick notes. On-site consumption. I just want to clarify that having helped write House Bill 3460 in that law that legalized medical marijuana dispensaries, patients are allowed to consume on premise in the locked closed room if they are an employee, not just any patient. And that was just one clarification that I wanted to add to the record. And the last thing I wanted to speak on was lounges, and I wanted to share with you an article, and I'd be happy to actually submit it in testimony. I haven't done so. From the Register Garden, Eugene, that was published probably about a year ago. I'm a University of Oregon alumni, and I'm very aware of a park that is just adjacent to the college where all the freshmen, for whatever reason, go to smoke marijuana. And they don't know that there's security lined around the border, right? Like, these guys have no idea they're walking into a bear trap. And sometimes it's
there's
a little
parents
comical.
Parents at home whose freshmen just went off to the U of O who are cringing right now.
Right, exactly. No. But here's the thing, right?
They're on the phone, but...
No. And they're going to love this because this is a proposal that they had put forth in the Register Guard, which was basically, you know, it was a mother who was very upset about, you know, I don't feel safe sending my children to play in this park because there's a bunch of freshmen getting stoned out of their minds, and I don't feel like that's a safe environment. And so basically, the next logical step from that was we need a place where they can go, where they're not going to adversely affect the communities, to where they can legally do what they're now allowed to do in a private, safe environment that's not in public. And so the more that we are able to continue to have the conversations about lounges and public safety, I think we're going to be able to address neighborhood concerns simultaneously.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks very much. Welcome.
Hi, my name is Scott Grenfell. I have a dispensary in Southeast Portland. I'm also a member of the Oregon Cannabis Business Council. I just would like the opportunity to keep growing our business, I guess, and not be, you know, we've been there for 4 years. We went through the thing a couple, you know, last year with 3460. We have a lot of money invested. We have employees. And I just want to make sure that we are able to keep doing what we want to do and not be phased out, like Mr. Morris was saying. And so just to consider all opportunities to allow the existing dispensaries to stay in business in the next few years and keep our employees employed and keep the, you know, stay in Portland and do what we're doing and keep working. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Rhonda Shaheen, and I'm a licensed math teacher here in Oregon. I'm also a dispensary owner and part of the Oregon Cannabis Business Council, and I just would like to reiterate a lot of what was said today. I think Amy Margolis' suggestion is a great idea. I also think Don Morris' suggestion is also a great idea. Oversaturation is an issue. You could take a look at Sandy. It's called the Green Mile. You've got a dispensary at 24th and Sandy, 28th and Sandy, 32nd and Sandy, 36th and Sandy. It goes right down the line. So every four blocks, there's a dispensary. And if you don't do the 1,000 feet from any marijuana facility, then you're going to have a dispensary at every two blocks down that street. And again, going back to dispensaries that have already been established for years, we are 1 year in operation. I'm not as long as Don and Scott with their dispensaries, but I gave up my job and my life savings to do this business. I think that I served the community well. I've been to the Kearns Neighborhood Association. I volunteered. My staff has volunteered for the association. So I think that we do our part to pave the way for this industry, and I think it's important for us to continue to do so. I also think that given that Colorado had an advanced start for current medical dispensaries, it's not far-fetched to follow a state that has done well with what they're doing. Thank you.
Very much. Anyone else wants to speak? So I know we want to bring our staff back up because I think several of us have questions and follow-up concerns. So maybe let me put this back in play here about the 1,000-foot perimeter.
Yes.
So make sure I understand. I'm not sure if I was fully grounded in the state law and rules, and that is under the current law about medical dispensaries and under what we think will be law and rule about recreational facilities, people will not be able to obtain a state license for both on the same site. Is that right?
That is correct. There's no plan to co-locate. The legislative intent was pretty clear in terms of keeping both systems completely separate and siloed. That's why medical dispensaries are regulated by the Oregon Health Authority, and the recreational system will be regulated by the Oregon Liquor Control Commission.
We heard from people today that we're hoping that they might be able to operate a combined facility, but that sounds like that hope is not likely to be supported by the state, right?
No.
But in the instance that Ms. Reinhart mentioned where there's two separate entrances, a wall between,
two separate supply lines, two separate business entities that are basically just divided by a wall, yes, that could potentially be allowed.
One of the limitations is with OLCC, there will be a seed-to-sale tracking system, and that does not exist with the Oregon Health Authority system.
Okay. And and so what do you think of this idea that Ms. Margulis proposed and actually that Mr. Sugarman also proposed in a slightly different form,
right,
of having the city pay attention to all dispensaries with the 1,000-foot buffer rather than, you know, segregating them into,
right,
these two types?
So there are a number of concerns that we have. We did evaluate this idea early on, and first of all, House Bill 3400 gives local governments explicit authority to establish a 1,000-foot buffer between recreational licenses. It does not speak at all to any kind of crossover. Further, the OLCC has stated publicly that as far as they're concerned in their rulemaking process right now, which is not complete, they do not acknowledge the existence of any medical dispensaries. So even if we were to submit a LUX statement that said, no, the city does not approve this license because of an existing medical dispensary within 1,000 feet, the likelihood that the state would be able to follow that is very small. We would be on really tenuous legal footing. At least that was the advice of our city attorneys through this process. So that was partially the issue. The other part was that because the state has established them within these two very specific systems, the idea that the medical dispensaries would somehow just sort of flip over into recreational is sort of a misnomer. They're going to have to go through the same licensing requirements that are still being developed by the OLCC as any other new business. And part of the public involvement process, or part of the feedback that we received, was about removing those barriers from individuals who are looking in to get into the recreational business. And so, I mean, this is a completely different field that essentially people are looking in.
Back up again and just form my understanding, and this may be a little PTSD on my part about Lottery Row, but if you told me that we have one state agency that's refusing to acknowledge the existence of another, that makes me angry. So I'll try to calm down. But just because one state agency is refusing to acknowledge the existence of another doesn't mean we shouldn't. So help me out on that, because that does sound like Lottery Row to me, where we have the OLCC and the Lottery Commission both gleefully issuing licenses with no regard for proximity and effect. And here we were, and here we are still in that spot with that problem. That's what this council's trying to avoid in dealing with this issue. So walk us through that and walk us through these options, because we all don't want to go there.
Right. So I think that the primary concern related to saturation is one that has what drove our advocacy in the state legislature around this issue. The idea that that we might end up with another Lottery Row because of the OHA and OLCC's communication probably is not the case. I mean, the worst case scenario that we have here is potentially a medical dispensary or a retail establishment, which are serving two different client bases within 1,000 feet. Our concern is that we may lose that partnership that we have with the state with the land use compatibility statement, which is unique within the marijuana laws. When Measure 91 was passed, it still had the language related to saturation and not within the public necessity or convenience that is housed in the Liquor Act and has been very problematic for us and has not been able to be interpreted by the state because they can't establish what a definition for saturation is for an urban environment, for a rural environment, for a coastal environment. So, and they haven't tried. So it was very mindfully removed from Measure 91 within House Bill 3400 and replaced with the opportunity for the city to place this buffer between recreational establishments. If we then go to the state through this partnership, through this established partnership, and say that we can't approve a LUX statement because they're within 1,000 foot of a medical dispensary that is not recognized by the state per the intent of the legislature, then we stand to lose that partnership and that ability to maintain even that 1,000-foot buffer.
But can I follow up on Charlie's
please.
Point? Because I'm a little confused about this, and it seems to me there's three potential options, and I don't know legally where this falls. There's the option that the legislation affirmatively says we can do something. That's the easiest. But that doesn't quite apply here. There's the option of the legislation specifically prohibiting us from doing something, which this council is very familiar with.
Yeah,
the legislature is never shy about being very prescriptive on that front. You know, we're preempted, or thou shalt not. Then there's something in the middle, and that's the exercise of our police power, where we have broad latitude. And I just don't understand. As I listen to this discussion, I'm not quite clear where it falls. I think your analysis is very thoughtful. I mean, I get that you're showing us there are all these connected pieces, and our lawyers are encouraged to be conservative in their advice. But I think we're in this gray where the law doesn't maybe affirmatively say we can extend to this point, doesn't say we can't, and then we're used to interpreting our police power pretty broadly to suit whatever what we believe is the public purpose. So for me, it's first and foremost a policy question.
Absolutely.
Of what do we think is the right buffer and for what reason, and then it's a legal analysis to see if we can sustain it. I'm going to start with the policy because I frankly am currently more persuaded by the Sugarman argument about a 1,000 foot, regardless of who licenses the entity. I also think administratively,